Translation. Sukadev Goswami continued, "My dear King, after Agastya Muni had thus cursed King Indrajumna, the Muni left that place along with his disciples. Since the king was a devotee, he accepted Agastya Muni's curse as welcome, because it was the desire of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, although in his next life he got the body of an elephant, because of his devotional service, he remembered how to worship and offer prayers to the Lord." Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki. This is the unique position of a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although the king was cursed, he welcomed the curse, because a devotee is always aware that nothing can happen without the desire of the Supreme Lord. Although the king was not at fault, Agastya Muni cursed him. And when this happened, the king considered to be due to his past misdeeds. Tate nukapam shushakim manasyah. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.8. This is a practical example of how a devotee thinks. He regards any reverses in life as blessings of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, instead of being agitated by such reverses, he continues his activities of devotional service. And Krishna takes care of him and enables him to be promoted to the spiritual world, back to Godhead. If a devotee has to suffer the reactions of past misdeeds, the Supreme Lord arranges for him to be given only a token of these reactions. And very soon, he is freed from all reactions of material contamination. One should, therefore, adhere to the devotional service, and the Lord Himself will very soon see one's promotion to the spiritual world. A devotee should not be disturbed by unfortunate circumstances, but must continue his regular program, depending on the Lord for everything. The word upadharayan, considering, is very significant in this verse. This word indicates that a devotee knows what is what. He understands what is happening in material, conditional life. Translation once again. Sukadev Goswami continued, "My dear king, after Agastya Muni had thus cursed King Indrajumna, the Muni left that place along with his disciples. Since the king was a devotee, he accepted Agastya Muni's curse as welcome, because it was the desire of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, although in his next life he got the body of an elephant, because of devotional service, he remembered how to worship and offer prayers to the Lord." Om Agyanti Mirandasya Gyananjana Shrakaya Chakshuram Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pastarya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vaidanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschaste Satanine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadara Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. This fourth chapter of the eighth canto is indeed one of the shortest chapters within the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, consisting of only 26 verses. So it was not so time-consuming to go through it, 26 verses. In this fourth chapter, after the Lord frees him from danger, Gajendra achieves the liberation of associating with the Lord. It's mentioned. The liberation of associating with the Lord. What an amazing liberation that would have been. The chapter begins with a summary, after which there is the description of King Huhu's life as a crocodile. Interesting name, King Huhu. Life as crocodile, and the chapter then concludes of how Gajendra regains his spiritual body. Now, in the purport of this verse, the two verses, 11 and 12, and also in the next verse, 13, Srila Prabhupada has given the reference of the 10th canto, 14th chapter, verse 8. And interesting that he gives it twice in this purport, which we just read out, and in the next one, he actually further elaborates. And the translation to that is, one who seeks your compassion and thus tolerates all kinds of adverse conditions due to the karma of his past deeds, who engages always in your devotional service with his mind, words, and body, and who always offers obeisances unto you, is certainly a bona fide candidate for liberation. Now, if we refer to the purport of that 10th canto, 14th chapter, text 8, it's mentioned there that Sridhar Swami explains in his commentary that just as a legitimate son has to simply remain alive to gain an inheritance from his father, one who simply remains in Krishna consciousness, following the regulative principles of bhakti yoga, automatically becomes eligible to receive the mercy of the Lord. In other words, he will be promoted to the kingdom of the Lord. Interesting. He just has to stay alive. My son the other day was saying, how many cars and houses do we own? He's only 6. So I said, we own this number of cars, this number of houses. Oh, is it all mine? He was saying, yes, all the cars are yours, all the houses are yours. You just simply have to stay alive. That's all I have to do. I don't really want to die anyway. Yes, I'm sure you don't. Oh, incidentally, well, he didn't say incidentally, but he said, how does Krishna die? I don't want to leave my body. But how does Krishna die? A 6-year-old is asking this. And I said, don't worry, son, you don't need to worry about that. But interesting enough, you just have to stay alive. So this inheritance of Krishna consciousness, we just have to remain in the boat of ISKCON, in the ship of ISKCON, and we'll be fine. You don't need to do anything else. Clearly stipulated here. The devotee earnestly awaits the mercy of the Lord, even while suffering the painful effects of previous sinful activities. A very simple mistake by Indrajumna Maharaj. Not even intentional. And what happens? He gets this mammoth body of an elephant. And then King Huhu, in the form of this crocodile, appears and attacks. So Gajendra was certainly in considerable discomfort. He's got his foot in the jaws, the teeth of this crocodile. Now Krishna in the Gita explains that a devotee who fully surrenders onto him is no longer liable to suffer the reactions of his previous karma. No longer reliable or liable to suffer the reactions of his previous karma. However, because in his mind a devotee may still maintain the remnants of his previous sinful mentality, the Lord removes the last vestiges, the remaining remnants, he removes of the enjoying spirit by giving the devotee punishments. By giving the devotee punishments that may sometimes resemble sinful reactions. Many a times when we're preaching, especially to the congregation, for instance, and they may say, why am I suffering? Why am I going through all this? I chant my 16 rounds, I'm coming to the temple, but still, you know, it's like I'm going through so many difficulties. Why? Undoubtedly, it could also be previous existence. It's mentioning here that the purpose of Krishna's entire material creation is to rectify. Interesting, the word rectify, the living entity's tendency to enjoy without the Lord. And therefore, the particular punishment given for a sinful activity is specifically designed to curtail the mentality that produced the very activity. The Krishna specifically designs that particular activity so that the devotee is free from the reaction ultimately. Interesting. Although a devotee has surrendered, Gajendra fully surrendered ultimately. Although a devotee fully surrenders to the Lord's devotional service, ultimately we're fully surrendered onto the activities which we perform, the devotion which we perform. Now, until that devotee is completely perfect in Krishna consciousness, a slight inclination to enjoy the false happiness of this world may still be maintained. Interesting. In the purport of the 10th canto, this is mentioned. The Lord, therefore, creates a particular situation to eradicate this remaining enjoying spirit. Now, I don't know what kind of arrangement is going to be made for me, but I am so used to the enjoyment of this body, senses, and the objects. But if we just simply pray that somehow the Lord will make that arrangement to eradicate the intentions of sensual enjoyment. I was just thinking, yesterday, last night, I didn't want to eat much, but my wife had cooked a big enough feast. And I'm thinking that should I just indulge, but then the following morning I'm going to have a problem. Then the only enjoyment is the prasad. There's no other real enjoyment in life. But even then, you have to consider the following morning. What will happen? Will it all clear? So somehow the Lord will make that arrangement to eradicate one's past sinful activities. Now, this unhappiness suffered by a devotee, Gajendra was suffering acute unhappiness, seemingly, outwardly, with his foot trapped. Now, this happiness suffered by a sincere devotee is not technically a karmic reaction. It is rather the Lord's special mercy for inducing his devotee to completely let go of the material world and go back home, back to Godhead. Now, towards the end of this purport of the 10th canto, which I think in the following verse, Srila Prabhupada actually gives the translation of it, but the purport towards the end, it's mentioned that therefore a devotee willingly accepts the Lord's merciful punishment. Now, any punishment I get, I'm not going to willingly accept. But that's the neophyte condition. But a devotee willingly accepts the punishment and continues offering respects and obeisances to the Lord within the heart through his words and through his body. Such a bona fide servant of the Lord, considering all hardships a small price to pay for gaining the personal association of the Lord. A small price to pay. Gajendra's price was very small. Seemingly a very uncomfortable situation. Just even if we sprain our ankle, it's quite painful. I was playing badminton a few weeks back and I fell, sprained my ankle, and it was quite painful. So Gajendra's foot here is within the jaws of the crocodile, very uncomfortable, but he very willingly accepts this punishment, so-called punishment. Why? Because it's a small price to pay. Because he will achieve the association of the Supreme Lord. That's the result. That's the austerity which one has to perform. So in essence, the fourth chapter really stresses on the aspect of how the Lord tests his devotee. If one were to just read the summary of this fourth chapter, then along the major parts, Jai Shri Shri Radha Goklananda ki jai, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai, Gonitai Bhagavan ki jai. It's really how the devotees are tested. And in particular, there are two devotees who are tested here, Indrajumna Swami and Maharaj Huhu. Now, the chapter describes the previous birth of Gajendra, as we know it, and as we know it to be Indrajumna Swami, Indrajumna Maharaj, sorry. And just because he, whilst meditating, he had actually renounced his entire kingdom, and he's simply meditating, and just because of that, his meditation was so acute when Agastya Muni appeared there with his unteen disciples. The king failed to acknowledge his presence appropriately. And because of that slight error, mentioning here a slight error, mistake, a slight mistake, the reaction was immediate that you will get the body of an elephant. But then Agastya Muni realized that, hang on, this is a bit too severe. He realized it was indeed a blessing in disguise. Because of that, he then receives the association of the Lord when Maharaj Huhu attacks, bites, and really takes a grip. If you look at the picture, he's taking that grip very tight. And Gajendra, with the rose, he then begins his prayers. And these prayers in the third chapter, we've covered that. These prayers then enable him to focus and meditate upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And as a result, Lord Narayan himself appears. Even the error which was made by Maharaj Huhu, his error was very insignificant. He was enjoying with some celestial personalities in the water, and he came across the sage Devala Rishi, and he's just accidentally kicked him. Must have just tapped him. Devala Rishi became very upset, and as a result, he cursed him that you will become a crocodile. But then again, that very same curse, that punishment, as it were, was a blessing in disguise for a devotee. So in essence, the tests which the devotees are given are indeed very much a blessing in disguise. And ultimately, these tests, a devotee never fails. Seemingly, there's failure. Externally, there may seem to be failure. But in essence, a devotee never fails these tests. That's the beauty. At school, we may have many exams. I was lousy at school. I'd failed all the tests. And failure means failure. It's marked a D minus, an F, whatever. But when it comes to the tests given by the Lord, when it comes to devotional tests, a devotee generally never fails. And the most munificent, merciful incarnation is none other than Lord Nityananda, as we all know. And one time he was testing, as he always does. He tests his devotees as well. And in the middle of the night, Lord Nityananda, he just gets up. And his servant also gets up. His servant at that time was Udayandatta. And the Lord says, in the middle of the night, I'm getting married. And the servant's kind of bewildered. I'm getting married. I want to get married. Let's go. It's the middle of the night. And the servant, Udayandatta, he says, where are we going, my Lord? He says, don't worry about that. We're leaving this place and we're going to a place called Ambika Nagara. And that's where I'm going to get married. So Udayandatta is a bit puzzled. But being the servant, he obviously tags along in the middle of the night. When the Lord appears in the village, the province of Ambika Nagara, he goes straight to the house of his devotee. His devotee was Suryadas Pandit. Suryadas Pandit was a devout devotee of Lord Nityananda. And from a distance, Suryadas Pandit notices that the Lord is appearing at his house for the first time. So he immediately rushes out. And before the Lord approaches, he pays his full dandavats. And he's totally elated. When the Lord appears, Suryadas Pandit begins his prayers. Lord Nityananda says, look, enough of that. I just want to get married and I want your daughter as my wife. Suryadas Pandit is somewhat bewildered. A test for Suryadas Pandit. Suryadas Pandit somehow, he says, I know that you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But we are of a higher caste of Brahman than you. Your birth was in Eka Chakra. How can I give my daughter to you? The Lord was somewhat surprised. He probably knew what the answer would be. He turned around and left. Suryadas Pandit was bewildered, mentioning very clearly that you may be the supreme personality of Godhead, but your caste is lower. How amazing. He turns around, goes back into the house, and then it dawns upon him that he's made a great error. He calls his younger brother, Goridas Pandit. Goridas Pandit is obviously a devout devotee of Lord Gauranga Mahaprabhu. And he calls him and he says, something very unusual has happened. Something amazing. But before I tell you, let me tell you that last night I had a dream. And in my dream, outside our house appeared a golden humongous chariot. And on this chariot was seated a Herculean personality, immense height, very well built, very fair. And he sat on the chariot, and on his right shoulder there was a plow, a golden plow. He got off the chariot and he asked me, is this the house of Suryadas Pandit? I replied, yes, it is. And that's when my dream broke. What do you think this means? He's asking his brother Goridas. Goridas mentions, well, undoubtedly this is Lord Balaram who's appeared in your dream. And then Suryadas mentions, well, that's the funny thing, you see, because Lord Nityananda was just here. I said, what? Lord Nityananda was here? Yes, he was here. So where is he now? Well, he's gone. Well, why did he leave? Well, because what had happened is he asked in marriage our Janava's hand in marriage. And I refused the proposal. When Goridas listens to this, I refused the proposal. In the kitchen, Janava Ma was there. And when she hears that the marriage has been refused, she just collapses. Whatever she had in the kitchen, in the hands, she just drops, and a sound is vibrated throughout the entire house. Some, you know, utensils dropping in the kitchen, Patanjali. You know, sometimes when there's a big crash, the pots, it's quite irritating, isn't it? All the ladies go rushing into the kitchen. What's happened? What's happened? All the cooks go rushing in. And they realize that Janava has collapsed. And she's unconscious. And she's entered epileptic fit. The men of the household, they rush in. Goridas Pandit and Suryadas Pandit realize that the daughter has epileptic fit. They immediately lift her transcendental body and take her body to the front veranda. All these are tests. And they lay her down, and very, very clearly it can be seen that she's about to leave her body, for she was so devastated. Suryadas Pandit mentions to Goridas, go and get a vaid. Go and get a doctor. The doctor appears. The doctor diagnoses that you'd better take this young girl back to the banks of the Ganges because she is about to pass away. She's about to die. So the women of the family just go ballistics. They're in panic stations. Goridas Pandit mentions to Suryadas Pandit that this is undoubtedly due to your aparad, to our aparad, to Lord Nityananda. Lord Nityananda is testing us. Just like Gajendra is being tested. Maharaj Huhu, the crocodile, is tested. We'd better go and get the Lord immediately to rectify the situation, otherwise our daughter will leave. So both of them go rushing. And on the outskirts of Ambikanagara, the Lord is sitting there very peacefully underneath a humongous tree, chewing his betel nut. And he sees both of them appearing. soon as they take darshan of the Lord, they pay full dandavats. He calls them nearer, come near. They both come near. The Lord obviously has a big smirk on his face. He gets out his right foot and plonks it right on the head of Suryadas Pandit, blesses him. And Suryadas Pandit then obviously begins his prayers, at the end of which he mentions to the Lord that please come back to the house. We have made a great error. Take the entire house, what to speak of my daughter, but everything belongs to you. So the Lord very mercifully, he comes back. And he comes back, and just outside the house, everyone congregates there. And for 7 days, he remains within the house. The marriage is then taken place. Within 7 days, a humongous marriage takes place. And after the marriage, for another 7 days, the Lord remains at the house of Suryadas Pandit. And on one particular afternoon, lunch is served. It was, as always, Chappan Bhog. Patanjali, I hope, is Chappan Bhog for lunch today. So there's many preps, and everyone is serving the Lord, and one particular personality is serving. And she has a pot of shukta sabji on her left hand, and with her right, she's serving the Lord. And as she serves the Lord, her sari unveils. A test. Her sari unveils, and she's thinking, what am I going to do? If I carry on serving, then it's an aparad because my sari is unveiled. If I stop serving and sort out my veil, then that's an aparad because I've stopped the serving. I'm in a dilemma. What to do? This personality is thinking. Then what she does, to everyone's utter amazement, is she manifests her four arms. So with her additional two arms, she sorts out her sari, and with the two arms which she had, she carries on serving. When Lord Nityananda observes this and witnesses this, he turns to Suryadas Pandit, the father, and he says to him, I don't want any dowry. I don't want anything. No dowry. But in the form of dowry for Janavama, I will accept hand in marriage of your younger daughter, Vasudama. So the Lord takes both the daughters. So interesting enough, Lord Nityananda, being exceptionally merciful, he's not going to test anyone where that devotee fails. Vasudama immediately manifests her forearms and sorts out her dilemma. Similarly, one time, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu similarly mentions to Shribas Thakur one time, why is it that you allow this Nityananda into your house? He causes havoc. He's very disrespectful. He throws prasad everywhere. And still you allow him here? Why do you continue? Shribas Thakur, he just laughs. And he mentions, Amare Pariksha Prabhu. Pariksha Prabhu. You're testing us. You're testing me. Even if Lord Nityananda were to drink a pot of wine, I would accept him as the Supreme Lord. Even if he were to marry a Mohammedan girl, I would accept him as the Supreme Lord. For you, my Lord, are testing me. Lord Nityananda is not at all different from you, for he is your expansion. Why do you test me? He continues. And then he offers prayers, after which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he roars very loudly and is very, very happy and satisfied with the answer given by Srivast Thakur. So again, Nityananda's tests are there. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's tests are there. But with these tests, certainly, there is not a question of failure. In essence, Sukadeva Goswami here ends the chapter by describing the good fortune of the elephant Gajendra. Sukadeva Goswami says that by hearing the narration of Gajendra's deliverance, one can also get the opportunity to be delivered. And Sukadeva Goswami vividly describes this, vividly describes, and thus the chapter comes to an end. Jai Tantra Srimad Bhagavatam Ki. I could go on a bit, but I won't, because breakfast is waiting. If there are any comments, corrections, please do speak. Any questions? I don't really feel qualified.